Bill George is a professor of management practice at Harvard Business School and the former chairman and CEO of Medtronic, the world's leading medical technology company. Under his leadership, Medtronic's market cap grew from $1.1 billion to $60 billion, averaging 35% a year. He is the author of best-selling books True North, Finding Your True North, and Authentic Leadership, and the forthcoming Seven Lessons for Leading in Crisis. It's my real pleasure to be talking today with Bill George. Bill, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you, Jay. It's a pleasure to be with you.
I have to ask you right off the bat, Bill, when you were planning to write this book, were you planning to write it even before these recent setbacks in our economy?
Honestly, I can't say that I was. I lived through it, had a front row seat to all the changes going on because I serve on the board of Goldman Sachs, and so we must have had 15 or 18 board meetings last fall. And then I was coming back from the World Economic Forum in Switzerland and thinking about how the crises and mistakes that people made, the current crisis we're in, really, there have been many, many crises people have, and there's some lessons we can learn from those. So I decided to write them all down into an article, and then eventually I decided to turn it into a book because I thought this would be not a retrospective on what went wrong, Jay, but what's a practical guide of how do you avoid crises when you get into them, how do you deal with them, and how can you win coming out of a crisis? I think too many people right now are hunkering down and trying to think they're getting through the crisis rather than thinking out, how can my company, my organization be successful coming out of it?
Well, and I think that is a mistake. It's hard to say that somebody else is making a mistake because each one of us has our own, you know, our own style and our own, you know, ideas on how to move through something like this. But I do see an awful lot of people sitting back right now.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And some, I use this, the sailing analogy, a lot of people do hunker down and think the storm's going to pass. Sometimes the storm lasts a lot longer, but almost without exception, Jay, coming out of a crisis, markets never look the same, customer tastes are never the same, and the competitive landscape never looks the same. And the winners are not those who get through it. You do have to get through it. The winners are those who figure out how can we position this whole opportunity to make our company a lot stronger. You know, the word crisis in Chinese characters is made up of two characters, danger and opportunity. I think we see the danger, no doubt about it, with all the big investment banks and all that went under. But I wonder how many people are really looking at what is the opportunity for my organization.
Boy, you better believe it. That's a great point. One of the things that I mentioned at the top is your success with Medtronic. So what exactly, I mean, with that kind of growth, people would look at you and maybe say, what's your experiences in crisis management?
Well, we sure had our share of crises. You know, I think they never ended. Before I went to Medtronic, we had a couple of major quality crises. We had a big problem with the FDA not approving our products when I first came there under Dr. David Kessler. So we had sales shortfalls and a lot of things, and we were never short of crises. But I think my philosophy was, let's get everyone together, let's figure out what's the right thing to do, let's get on with doing it, and then let's figure out how we can turn this whole situation to our advantage to give our company the reputation of being both high integrity and very innovative and creative in how it approaches problems.
I want to look at some of those lessons that you detail in the book in just a second. But first of all, Bill, I want to ask you, the strain and the stress of tough times on leaders, Where do they go for that reassurance? Because everybody's coming and looking to them. Where do they go for that respite? Where do they go for answers?
Well, that's a great question. I did try to write about that in lesson two when I talk about don't be Atlas, get the world off your shoulders. Because I think there's a tendency to kind of hunker down and take it all on yourself. And I think at a time like this, you need to do two things. You need to bring your teammates and your organization real close around you to get the very best minds and the best energy you can addressing the problems and get everyone committed to solving them with you and figure out what the real issues are, what is the root cause of these problems, and come up with solutions. But beyond that, I think it's really important to have an external support network. In my own case, I always turn to my wife because she's the best counselor anyone could possibly have. But to have someone you can be totally open with and can bring a perspective to things, and so if you feel like you're in a rut, she can always help me see through it. Beyond that, I've had some very, very wise mentors, people like David Gergen and Warren Bennis, that advise me in complex situations and That's extremely helpful. And I think it's important also that you build your resilience. That, you know, people talk about, I'm only sleeping 4 hours a night. Well, if you do that, you're not going to make good decisions. To feel like you're sharp mentally, sharp physically, stay in good shape, keep exercising. I like to meditate. And beyond that, how do you relieve the stress? You know, you can't just work 18 hours a day or you'll be find yourself in trouble. So I think you need to relieve stress to build that resilience so you can take on shots or people's criticism, or you can take on disappointments that you can't get out of this. And I think that's the main things I can suggest, is to have a really strong support network outside of your workplace.
I've heard people refer before to people as wartime generals, and sometimes we're peacetime generals. Do you think that exists among CEOs too?
Well, these days CEOs are facing probably more war than peace, but I think it definitely does. And I think the sad thing is that a number of CEOs got to the top by being builders or being maintainers, but they never faced a crisis. And I strongly believe that no one should ever run an organization who hasn't been through a crisis, because you're not prepared for the worst and you don't know how to do it. I know I had my first crisis when I was 27 years old, and I'd gotten trying to start up the microwave oven business, and the FDA, the Surgeon General, was saying these products may be hazardous to your health, and it was a baptism by fire for me. So I think there's a great deal to be said for getting early experience, having a crisis early, because I remember those early experiences. They came back to help me 20, 30 years later. And so people get to the top, as you're saying, the peacetime generals probably aren't going to cope very well, because they don't know quite how to deal with the severity of the crisis can bring.
Well, and to your earlier point, too, they may not know how to deal with all that extra stress. I mean, you really have to have a certain amount of life balance and that support structure set up in advance, so that when you really do need it, it's there for you to depend on.
Yep, and the key is in advance. Do it now when times are good. You can't decide to set up those habits or set up the support network when you're in trouble. It's way too late. And you'll have your responses will all be wrong.
My guest is Bill George. He's the new author, or the existing author, of a new book, 7 Lessons for Leading in Crisis. Bill, I wonder if you wouldn't share with our listeners some more of those lessons. You already mentioned don't be an Atlas, get the world off your shoulders. I wonder if you'd share with some of those other lessons.
Well, the first lesson, Jay, is face reality, starting with yourself, because if you can't face the reality you're in a crisis, you're sure not going to solve it. And I think a lot of people go into a period of denial. In fact, whole organizations go into denial and deny they have a problem, and they never can fix anything that way. But a lot of times you have to look yourself in the mirror and say, well, what am I responsible for? How did I get us into this situation? Did we overexpand? Did I make some mistakes? And it's only through doing that that you can face the crisis. I have a great story in my book about Kevin Scherer, the CEO of Amgen, where they had a new drug coming out, and there are a lot of questions coming up about its safety, particularly used off-label. And everyone was in denial, and he finally shook his organization out of that. But then he found no one was responding, and he finally sat down with himself and took out a pad of paper and said, what are all the things I did wrong? He said, boy, it turned out to be a long list. And when he shared that with his people, they were shocked that a CEO would admit his mistakes like Kevin did. But then, having done that, he could free himself up. Then others would admit their mistakes as well. And then they put a plan together, and they solved the problem. It cost them $1 billion in revenue, but they saved the drug, unlike Merck's Vioxx drug, which they lost altogether. So that worked very well for Kevin.
You've got a lot of great stories in the book, Bill, and I really appreciate that, because it's almost not here's what you should do, although there's a bit of that in there, but also here's what other people have done in similar circumstances, both good and bad.
Right, and I do try to call it pretty candidly. The third lesson is dig deep for the root cause. You know, it's like going to the doctor, and he gives you a superficial symptom and gives you some pills to take or a Band-Aid, and you cover up something much more serious. And I think that happens a lot, that a lot of times the root cause of the problem needs to be dug into. Certainly Wall Street did that, and they had the warnings about subprime mortgages. They had the warnings, long-term capital management. They didn't deal with these things. And so the root cause is much deeper. They were taking way too many risks and paying people to get short-term results and not looking at the long-term implications for their companies, and that's why organizations like Bear Stearns and Lehman Brothers went out of business. And closely related to that is lesson four, which is get ready for the long haul. One of the great dangers leaders have is thinking, well, we'll just hunker down and the crisis will blow over, kind of like being at sea and you have a little storm, you think it's going to blow through.
Just ride it
out.
What
happens if it, yeah, but it may last a long time. And you say, you know, things couldn't get any worse. Well, guess what? They will get worse. I've been in so many situations where we don't look and realize just how bad things can be. That you're just seeing the tip of the iceberg. And if you don't really focus on how bad it could be, you may not be prepared. You may run out of cash. You may run out of organizational energy. You may not have a large enough plan to fix it. You maybe just have a patch-over plan to get through it. And without being ready for the fact that crisis can last a long time, as our current jobs crisis is lasting a long time, your quick-fix solutions are not going to solve anything. Now, lesson number five is never waste a good crisis. A lot of people are claiming these phrases now, but actually it comes from Machiavelli, who said never waste the opportunities of a good crisis. And I think that's really true. You know, when things are going well, it's really hard to create fundamental changes in an organization. But when you have really difficult times, you know, that's the best opportunity to get people willing to make the fundamental changes. If you go back about 20 years, that's what Jack Welch did at General Electric. He created a crisis of the global competition because he saw it coming before anyone else saw this huge globalization era. And he realized GE had too many layers of management, too many staff people, was too slow and not performance-oriented enough, and he restructured the entire company on that basis. He took a lot of criticism, but you know what? GE was ready to go when the globalization crisis hit, and companies like Westinghouse was almost out of business, and Siemens and Philips couldn't keep up with GE's ability to respond. So he knew how to take advantage of a crisis.
I have to say, Bill, that's one of my favorite ones because it seems to me to be the most proactive. You know, it provides you that opportunity to create a meaningful change in the organization, as you mentioned how GE did it. I don't think we have to look too far, much farther than the car industry, to find a group that probably wasted their own crisis.
Boy, that's right. I do write about that specifically in the book. I mean, what a tragedy General Motors is, eh? Maybe they're getting turned around now, but here's a company that had crisis after crisis. I grew up in Michigan, and I saw them 30 years, and they'd always kind of just hang on or get the government to bail them out of the crisis, and they never fixed the fundamental underlying problems that they had with their employees and with their quality of their cars and the features of their cars. And now they find themselves literally bankrupt and trying to come out of that. And I think the new leadership may bring them out. But contrast that with Ford, who was in a similar position. They got new leadership, and the CEO went out and borrowed $24 billion without even having a crisis and anticipating it. But now he's totally retooled the entire Ford product line and the entire organization. So they look a lot better. So lesson number six, Jay, is you're in the spotlight. Follow your true north. What I mean by that is today communications is one and the same between internal communications and external communications. You really can't distinguish between the two. And I think it's really important to be transparent with the media, be transparent with your own employees, and to tell the truth, tell the whole story. And that's the only way you have credibility. Organizations don't do that, find themselves in great difficulty if they don't tell the whole story and provide that level of transparency. And so I think the idea that you can avoid the media and avoid the spotlight is just not the case. And you have to be really careful to follow what you believe in, your true north.
And finally, lesson seven.
Lesson seven, my favorite one, Jay. Focus, go on offense, focus on winning now. And I think a lot of companies really have to think about this. You know, markets never look the same coming out of a crisis. Certainly the retail business is not going to look the same coming out of this crisis, nor is the automobile business, certainly not the banking and financial business. And so I think what you need to do is to not just play defense. You got to go on offense. How can we win? How can we restructure the entire industry to play to our strengths? How can we shed our weaknesses? And how can we change our strategies to become out the winner? Look what Steve Jobs did with the enormous crisis they had at Apple. And he came back in there and he first redesigned the computer line to be much more consumer attractive. But beyond that, then he got a whole new business. He got in the iPod business and transformed the entire recording industry. And then he brought out iTunes and changed the whole music business, the point where people don't even buy CDs anymore. They just download them on their iPods.
Yeah, game changer.
And now he's jumped in. He changed the game in telephony, you know, with Motorola and Nokia and everyone duking it out, and Samsung and everyone for decades. You know, he comes in there, you know, totally out of the blue and takes over the mobile phone business by offering the iPhone with all that tremendous information and consumer friendliness. And what do they have now? 300,000 applications. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So that's, to me, a great example of someone who figured out, let's not beat defense. You know, we can't beat IBM in its own game. Or Dell, why are we trying? Let's play our game. And he's created a great company and a great business and really restored Apple to the great growth company it used to be when he was there before.
Well, and I think that sets up my next question and probably my last question, Bill, and that is, do great leaders really rise to the top? Do they really make their name for themselves by leading their companies or their people through a crisis?
No question, the test of any leader is in a crisis. And I think you see the mediocre leaders falling by the wayside, and the great ones do step into it, up to it. It's like the war general who knows how to step up to that really important crisis and leads people through it, because that's the real test. Everyone's watching you in a crisis to say, is this the person we want to follow and who can lead us through it and can bring us together to figure out how to be successful in this crisis? And so I think it is the test of a leader. But let me go one step further, Jay. I think it's really important for young leaders to get the opportunity to be tested in a crisis now, not wait until they get to the top. I think there's a tendency to kind of sit on the sidelines and be in an advisory capacity, but it's far better off to take on a smaller business and show what you can do and face your own crises. Because when you do that, those same lessons will apply when the playing field is much, much bigger. And if you don't have that experience, you can find yourself in real difficulty and just feeling overwhelmed. And I've seen a number of CEOs who failed because they just felt totally overwhelmed.
Well, and I think much of your advice here, Bill, is to really go out and take the bull by the horn, so to speak, and really get out there and lead and don't just sit there and hunker down. Can leaders go too far with that? Can they make mistakes? And if so, is that a total loss?
You absolutely can make mistakes. Boy, I've made a lot. Sometimes you say, we're going to do this, and you find out that you're going the wrong way. And I think one of the key qualities of good leaders is being adaptive. But the idea that you would just sit back and wait to see what happens means you're going to lose for sure. I always said the worst decision I ever made was the one I didn't take. And so it's better to be in the playing field, making mistakes, and then adapting to those, because that's the way you learn what's going on. If you're not in the game, you're not going to learn. So, yeah, I think you make mistakes. We did that at Medtronic 10 years ago, and we took some huge risk and made $13 billion worth of acquisitions. And, yeah, they weren't all perfect, but, boy, we learned from that, and it transformed the company. But you had to be willing to take the risk. And so a crisis is a real test of a leader's courage. And leaders that aren't willing to take a risk, that don't have the courage, will surely fail. And so, it's far better to, if you will, go down to defeat or run into problems when you're active and doing your best to lead. And I think people respect that even if you make mistakes.
It's that trial by fire. It's that forge that you put the metal in to heat it up and get all the impurities out. They're great metaphors, Bill, and it's a great book. It's 7 Lessons for Leading in Crisis. Bill George is the author. Bill, is there another place where people can find you on the web to learn more about you and your organization?
There sure is. My website is billgeorge.org, www.billgeorge.org, O-R-G. And I hope they'll go check it out. We'll find a lot more information. We've got a lot of videos up and other activities, so I can get a good sense of what this is all about. And frankly, I encourage them to contact me. And we've got a study guide to go along with 7 Lessons for anyone that gets the book that can allow you to work with a small group of people and work through the lessons you face in your own company, your own organization, or even in your own life.
Bill, best of luck to you, and it's been my real pleasure to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you, Jay. It's a privilege to be with you, and you're doing a great job. Just keep it going.